This episode is brought to you by Mutinex Growth OS,
the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost effective. And this is my best radio voice.
That's the most creative thing you've ever said.
How's this for a call to action?
Mutinex Growth OS, your best decisions start here. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co.
I'm sick of this. Let's get those Just Eat fools on the line. Oh, we can always edit it, you know, but we'll capture it. And that was really the bit that we lent into. I'm sick of it, you know. We're gonna do this doggy style.
Welcome back to another episode of Black T-Shirts. Today on the show, we have a special guest all the way from the UK who's joining us live in person in our Sydney studio. That guest is Susan O'Brien. She's the Global Vice President of Brand at Just Eat, or as our Australian listeners would know it, Menulog. But no matter where in the world you live, you might have seen the global campaign Did Somebody Say, which featured huge celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Katy Perry, and Christina Aguilera. And it has built the business globally. And today we're talking to the person who architected that work, Susan O'Brien, or as she likes to be known, Suzo. Welcome to the show, Susan O'Brien. Are you wearing a black T-shirt?
Nearly black T-shirt. I've gone with the colour black. I'm actually wearing a black jumpsuit because I felt that I needed to be wearing something quite comfortable today, not just because I was seeing you, but I'm going out on a few deliveries later on with one of my colleagues at Menulog.
Oh, very good. And how long are you in the country for? We've actually got Suzo live with us in the studio. How long are you here in Sydney for?
I'm here for just over a week, and the sun is shining. What's not to like? So I feel very privileged to be here.
What's not to like? I hear seagulls are not to like.
Let's not mention the seagulls.
No? Okay.
What happened with the seagulls?
Barangaroo, I think I was.
Yeah.
Having lunch, a lovely Vietnamese sandwich, really enjoying it, and got attacked, basically. The seagull seemed to be hungrier than I was.
Of all the Australian animals that would attack you...
Yeah, seagulls are pretty low on the list.
But, Anyway,
hey, and what you said you're doing deliveries. So what, you're delivering Menulog to various people tonight? What are you doing?
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Going to kind of feet on the street, so to speak, and put myself in the shoes of our fantastic courier community, our riders, who go out day in, day out, delivering moments of joy to our customers out there. So, yeah, going to experience that tonight, and hopefully I'll get a tip. But let's see.
Why are you doing it?
I think it's really important that you understand the experience that the courier has and some of the challenges that they face, so that when you are creating activity for them or responding to any briefs that relate to our couriers, that I've got deep first-hand experience. I think it's really important not to just stay in the office where it's nice and easy and cozy. I'm really lucky because the sun is shining. If I was doing this in London today, I think I'd get very wet.
No, I agree. I always say a desk is a dangerous place to do marketing from. How often do you get out and spend time with the delivery crew?
Not enough is what I'd say. Not enough. I think as well as kind of talking to customers and having, you know, one-to-one conversations, which we do in our customer closeness program, where you talk to real people outside of London who may have a very different perspective on life to you and have different things that they're looking to solve for as customers. We also talk to our restaurant partners who are the lifeblood of our business. And so, you know, what are the challenges that they face? You know, whether that's leaning into the cost of energy, cost of food, in the cost of living thing that we're in right now. But yeah, really important that you get out and talk to the restaurants, get out, take part in what the courier gets up to.
Imagine you were busy, really, really busy, and you only had an hour spare for the rest of year. Would you spend that hour getting to understand a rider, a driver, a customer, or the consumer?
Oh, that's kind of put it in some type of hierarchy of importance, isn't it?
Just take the hour off. I take the hour off.
I might have a little lie down. No, I think they're all important, right? I suppose ultimately we want to get deep and understand the customer, and you know, different customers, different markets. We're in 20 markets, so very different potential needs, different demographics, different cuisine types, you know, all of the above. So, yeah, kind of trying to work out what the glue is and so that we can create fantastic marketing activity, because that's the business I'm in. So.
And when you say customer, you actually mean, do you mean consumer or your restaurant partners? You mean consumer or customer?
No, actually, so you're right.
Existing,
so in terms of customers, you know, you could say that our courier is a customer, because it's important about employee engagement and they're really important to us. You could say a restaurant partner is a customer, and the customer and the consumer. The consumer, I would classify, are customers that we have yet to get.
Right, okay. So customers being people who are into your brand already.
Who use us, yeah.
So... what do you love about being a marketer?
We get to create great work. We get to be creative. We get to make things.
You should hang out with Brent more often.
Yeah, I would have said the same
thing. That's worse than exactly.
Oh, right. Okay. Given that I've only just met you.
Just let's expand on that a bit more. I mean, do you actually consider yourself a creative person?
Yes, I do, actually. I do see myself as a creative person, but maybe a better way to describe me is that I'm a creative enabler, and I work with fantastic people who are so talented, way more talented than me. And I suppose if they understand the ambition and the job to be done, I suppose I am an enabler in getting them to just go and make that happen and then come and show me. I love it when I get to see the work. I suppose the boring bit of my job is signing off purchase orders and job requisitions, and that's
that'd
when
be
people
fun,
really
wouldn't it?
Like me and
yeah.
come looking for me. But it's when I get to walk through the team in the studio and get to see what's on the screen before they hide it and say, it's not ready for you to see yet, Susie.
In school, there's kind of the jocks and the creative crew. There's not really the creative enablers. That's not really a subculture.
What's
within
a jock?
Oh, like a sporty, like a super sporty person.
I think that's too linear. I think you're just kind of
yeah. It's definitely overly simplified for sure. But where did you put yourself at school? How did you see yourself?
Well, the things I loved at school was drama and sport.
See, it's not linear, Adam.
No,
you can do
no.
both.
Yeah, right. And so how had the drama stayed with you?
You need to speak to my husband about that, but he'd probably say, yeah, the drama queen is still with
you. Right. And do you literally do any drama these days in terms of...
No, but I go to the theatre quite a lot.
Yeah, you do?
And do you think it's helped you as a marketer to have that background in drama, understanding story, your ability to present, how's it helped you in what you do now?
I mean, nothing as well when you go to a live music concert, how it makes you feel. Mm. This is all about how it makes you feel and the efficacy that goes into those productions and standing up there and putting oneself out there. I love all that. So, yeah, I love drama, I love theatre, love it all.
What type of theatre in particular, if you could just see one type of thing. What
if you've got just 1 hour to see one.
And you can see it because Dare.
This is Adam's Sophie's choice of Adam.
Yeah. I'll think of a new interview question.
Well, I mean, look, another series. I sound pompous and say, you know, Sadler's Wells and kind of quite, you know, dramatical stuff. But look, I love a bit of Mamma Mia, I'm not going to lie. So, I mean, it spans everything, you know, from musical theatre to one-man shows to a bit of comedy. You know, I think any live production, you know, there's magic in that and how it makes one feel. So that's what I love about it.
And so you talked about the importance of getting out of the office and meeting customers and, you know, meeting people who work for your brand. Do you think it's just as important to go and see a show, see a theatre, like to also nourish that part of our lives as marketers?
Well, look, I say to the team that I work with, you know, get out, go to art galleries, whatever inspires you, go and look at stuff and bring some of it back and kind of what inspires you. So, yeah, I encourage that. I think, you know, meanwhile, back in the real world, you can get lost in that day to day. I mean, I just talked about the stuff that makes the world go round, you know, the purchase orders, the admin, the meetings, the, you know, all of that. But I think to get that creative inspiration, you need to go out, meet, see, feel, touch. I think that's really important.
100%. And how do you maintain that and push that creative vibe through the organisation?
I try, but I think you want to work with people who want to do that naturally rather than force people to do it. That makes it like work, less like something that is innate within the people. So, yeah, I suppose it's like the types of people that you hire. And one size fits all isn't going to work. So, you know, you're going to get different types of people that like different types of art, that like different types of music. You know, people in my team, they talk about music I've never even heard of, you know. And then I can go back to some 90s classics. But no, I don't think I kind of force it on people. I just encourage it. And I suppose that's where I got that probably. I kind of picked up that you think it's a naff word, you know, the enabler, the facilitator, the person that encourages people to go out and look at things differently.
It's not a naff word at all. Ignore him. It's a great word. No, but let's talk about how do you enable it? How do you become an enabler within a, you know, corporation like Just Eat? Like what do you do? What do you do to make it happen?
I don't know if I can answer that. I don't know the answer. I think it's more about approach and style and just having conversations with people, you know, and I suppose you could say it's how you lead. I'd like to think I am a very open leader, someone who's approachable, you can talk about stuff with, and that could be anything. That could be, have you watched the latest epi of this? Have you seen whatever on Netflix? You know, just having that open conversation and then going, well, what did you like about it? What about that character? Or what about the music? I think it's just having that openness to have those types of conversations that are quite rich.
It sounds like a long way away from an efficiently run company.
So, do you think?
Yeah. Like if you... With all due respect, if you're what I like about it is you didn't go to process, you didn't go to anything particularly linear, and it's just about those incidental conversations and the richness and all that kind of stuff and where ideas might come from. And especially for a tech company that's so, I imagine, would have hardcore systems and processes within it to maintain that kind of sense of magic or fun or theatrics or whatever you want to put it, would be hard.
Well, I think what I would say is that we, and again, I don't want to kind of put two words together and just think that that's what they equal, but we are efficient and we look at that. How can we drive efficiencies at scale with agility, all those words for sure. But I get to work in the marketing department where, of course, it's really important to have process. You know, we are sticklers about briefs. You know, we have a marketing operations function where we join forces and make sure that we have solid processes, because otherwise you're going to be working in chaos, and chaos isn't good either, where there's a bit of a free-for-all and we're not going to meet the deadlines. We've got very strict deadlines. We've got commercial targets that we need to hit day in, day out, looking at those, you know, real-time metrics of, you know, orders, customers, you know, frequency, all of those metrics are there, but you need to allow a little bit of breathing space to get to great work, I think.
Yeah. You've overseen kind of globally one of the most lauded campaigns over the last few years, which is the kind of the Did Somebody Say campaign, which started with Snoop and then went to Katy Perry and now with Christina and
Lato.
That was... You started that, and that's really theatrical. I was interested in you're into drama. I'm just wondering whether, like, that's a really theatrical campaign. It's a really literal manifestation of what you're talking about before. But that all started with you running a pitch and McCann winning that pitch.
Yeah.
How did you, just maybe talk us through that, and how did you know when you saw the winning response that it was the right thing?
In the pitch process, yeah. That was back in 2018, mm-hmm. and we were trying to fast track that decision making. And I'll come back to the Snoop bit as well, but so different. I mean, some of the best agencies in London working on the brief. And I probably wouldn't have put McCann in the front running during the pitch process, you know, from tissue chemistry, et cetera. But on the day, it was obvious. And there was a little bit of sense of relief, but McCann ran an incredibly theatrical pitch. And I'm really, you know, pleased.
Did they know you're into drama?
No, of course they didn't. But that didn't matter. They didn't put that on for me.
No. But it's interesting, though.
Yeah. But I think what happened there was the investment that they had clearly made to get it right, to win over the client on the day, was there loud and clear. It just so happened the idea was fantastic. And the idea was, did somebody say?
With Snoop, or did that come later?
Snoop came way later.
I was going to say, because no one ever runs the pitch work. But that's amazing. The idea was intact from the pitch.
Completely intact.
Mm.
So intact. You know, we ran it and we were live the following year without Snoop. Because Snoop didn't come till 2020, right in the height of COVID. But
so you literally bought the pitch work and ran the pitch work.
Exactly what we did.
What was the original work? Who was in it?
Nobody famous.
No one famous. It was just
setting up the song. In fact, it was when I look back, it could have been deemed as a little bit of a naff musical in terms of, you know, the barber choir singing Did Somebody Say in quite a traditional way. And that is a story in and of itself, because when we then went to the shoot, I'm not going to mention who the director was, but I arrived, and this is the Did Somebody Say 1.0 that everybody thinks was Snoop, but actually we had one before that, which was Nobody Famous, but it was like tying into those moments when you're sitting on the sofa and watching the TV and the characters came alive and they all sang Did Somebody Say. But I got to the shoot and there was this piece of music playing that I'd never heard, and it certainly wasn't the music that I'd heard at the pitch, but by then it was all a bit late. So there was a bit of a cheeky shift in tonality of the Did Somebody Say mnemonic, which we've moved on and on and on as we've gone through. But what I mean by that was everything was being worked to that new mnemonic and that new sound. So, of course, by the time, you know, you've left the shoot, that sound is in your head and it's there and that's normal. It's a bit like, you know, and then somebody does a new take on it. And I remember playing it to the chief exec. Yeah, I can't quite say on air what he said, but he basically said, change it back. In fact, it was the penultimate day of the shoot. Do you remember that? Yeah. And we were having a little bit of a pre-wrap party. We were nearly there. And I got a call. We were in one of the hotel rooms and, you know, we were having a bit of fun and it wasn't late. And thankfully, I hadn't had a drink at that stage. And my chief exec had said, you need to change it. Of course, it can't change it. It's all too late. Mm. So I leave the said party and go back to my room and I probably cried. But I just thought we have to carry on. You know, we've got a very specific type of director who I need him to stay on the set and finish this work, which we did. And then, of course, I went into overdrive and I got back and went back to that good old-fashioned thing called research and tested the before and the after. And I remember I was in our Swiss office in Zurich and the results were in and they said to me, Susie, are you sitting down? And I said, just tell me. And so the results came in and it was the new work that just far out exceeded customer research.
Wow. I'd have much preferred that story to end on the consumer's preferred.
The old one,
but you went with it anyway. But it's.
But just to that point, then I had to phone the chief exec and I said, I've got the data points now.
Yeah. And do you think without that research and data, you could have convinced the CEO to change the work, change the soundbite?
Well, I didn't have anything else, did I? So that's a different conversation. But it would have been a more challenging one because you then get into subjectivity and that's the one that he liked versus the one that, again, you're not the target audience. Mm. What are other people saying? Mm. And you could say I got lucky, but I don't think I got lucky. I think it was the right thing to do. And I remember calling him, telling him I've got the data points, and he went, well, I always love the other one anyway, Suzo. So, yeah, crack
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's so interesting how people just hold on to these opinions, but they're really adamantly, but oh, yeah, you know, just throw it out.
But there's a lot that's interesting in that. You go first.
Oh, I just really want to go back. The pitch was theatrical. What did they do theatrically? Did they start, you know, like...
Singing.
They sung in the pitch.
No, so what happened was it was pre-Christmas, all the pitches, and we were quite determined.
How pre-Christmas?
Like the week before.
Oh, hey.
So we were very...
Classic client move, Adam.
No. I want to be fair because we all knew that we wanted to get through the pitch process before Christmas because everyone wanted to have a Christmas. And my big commitment to all of the agencies was we will let you know this side of Christmas. So you can either down tools or celebrate or what have you. And I was true to my word. That is what I did. And I called Alex Lubar and I told him that we'd won the business. So that was a joyful moment as well. But coming back to your question, it's Christmas and it's in McCann. And it was their old building just off the back of Russell Square in London, which was a former NCP car park. So it had a lot of Art Deco character. And they had decorated it. There was like snow, there were trees, there were deer. They'd done that anyway. But in the front window, they had a scooter, branded scooter, delivery bag. So before we'd even got in the front door, it's like, okay, these guys seem to care. Mm. They seem to want it. And then we came out of the elevator on whatever floor it was of the former car park. And there was a barber choir singing, just singing. I can't remember. It might have been a Christmas song. It wasn't Did Somebody Say? Mm. And we go into the pitch and these guys are singing. I'm thinking, what are those guys doing singing? That's a bit weird. And then when we came out of the pitch, they were singing Did Somebody Say? Mm. In various different levels and very different bits of harmony. And it was, yeah, it was joyful. It was a really wonderful feeling. And I was still to go another pitch. Mm. So they were number three and I still had number four to go.
Fuck, imagine what would have happened if the pitch must have gone well and therefore the singing kind of didn't seal the deal because I'm sure, but it kind of fitted. But if the pitch had gone badly and then they're singing.
And you hate
that,
it.
And you hate it. And then that poor quartet is singing that song.
You'd have felt sorry for the quartet, right?
Yeah, but, and then you'd have moved on.
No, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
And if I suppose if it had gone badly, Alex Word might have gone out and said, right,
go home.
Yeah. We'll send you your check, but yeah.
That's
cool. And you knew in your gut then and there in the pitch.
Yeah, it was really good. And the final pitch, I'm not going to reveal what agency it was, just fell so flat.
Yeah.
And that was the agency that was winning all
yeah,
the
right.
way. And so they, I thought, we've clutched, got something.
They clutched defeat from the jaws of victory, just like that.
They really did. And so we had this, and then we go to the final pitch. I thought, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got something,
yeah,
and it's great, but I wonder what I'm going to get now. And so my expectations were,
Were the initials of the agency?
Nice try.
W1K,
nice.
S&S.
Nice try.
That would be good if you told us. That'd be funny.
So it's interesting that you bought Did Somebody Say in the pitch and you ran it.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of interesting that you – did. How did it perform, that first campaign? Did it perform really well in market?
Well, like any market, I remember the Irish team. We've got an office out in Ireland. And the sales figures didn't move on the first airing. It's not working. It's like, whoa, just give it some time and believe in it. And there was an anxiety because we'd kind of got a whole heap of markets together to run the same piece of creative. It was a little bit nerve-wracking. Did it do well? Yes, it did. But of course, that was the precursor to Snoop because it became this earworm that divided people.
Right, it's a little bit polarizing.
More than a little bit. Yeah.
And how did you feel about that? How do you feel about polarizing work as a marketer?
Well, I think I'd come from work where you end up kind of going to the lowest common denominator, so people don't feel anything and they're not talking about it. And so how did I feel? I was scared, right? I was scared because I thought, oh, God, you know, if people really hate it. But at the same time, it was people are talking about this work. So therefore, it's having a desired impact. You know, it's not quite the Marmite love hate, but there was definitely that, as you said, that polarizing love hate thing going on. I love it, I hate it. People were singing it in the playground. I remember I was going to a concert at the O2 and there were a group of girls behind me and they were singing it. And I thought, oh my God,
job
that's my
done.
Work.
Yeah, that's
job
nice.
Is done. People
yeah.
are talking about it. Yeah. And that's a truth. So, but yeah, you want every course, you know, there's a level of ego in there. You want everyone to love your work.
Mm.
And it's not even my work, is it? I just commissioned it.
Oh, it's your work.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's definitely your work. You enabled it. Now, so just, but just
I paid for it.
You did, but just so it worked well. Obviously, like it was working well enough that you stuck with it, right? I think that's the interesting bit, that you bought it in the pitch, you made one execution or one campaign. It was a little bit polarizing, but obviously you're seeing it was working. But then I love that you doubled down on it and went, right, no, there's something in this. We need to just stick with this idea and sort of take it to the next level. Is that sort of how it transpired?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. It's like we knew we were onto something. We didn't quite know how big this platform was going to be across our global markets. And the one opening line on the 60 that Snoop did for us, which I kind of spoke to the creatives and said, I'm really not sure about this because you're making us out as idiots as the client. But I think that there is a level of, which is what's charming about the people that we work with. You know, we know ourselves. And so that it was the charm was in the level of humility. And the line was, I'm sick of this. Let's get those Just Eat fools on the line. And I thought, you know, by calling me and you can call me a fool, but I was thinking calling our C-suite, the rest of the C-suite fools, was quite adventurous. And I thought, oh, we can always edit it, you know, but we'll capture it. And that was really the bit that we lent into. I'm sick of it, you know, we're gonna do this doggy style, as in tapping into that polarizing bit, love, hate. He clearly hated it. He thought he could do it better.
Yep.
And then he delivered.
And there was a self-awareness to it that not everyone loves it. It's a bit of an earworm. I think it's so important for brands to be self-aware. So many aren't. So many are operating in some weird brand vacuum where they don't acknowledge what's really going on in the world. So I think that's...
But did that come out as a creative decision on the shoot, or were you after that to take the piss out of a...
It was before the shoot, and then I just was reflecting on the plane, this line that I was really grappling with.
Yeah, yeah.
That I just thought, it was that self-awareness, and it was, I struggled with it. And then it was like, oh, come on, Suzo, we'll just record it. And I kept thinking, okay, let's just, we'll get it, but I'm not going to run with it.
No, I'm super interested. Like, what's the lesson there, do you think, to marketers? Because I think most marketers have killed that line, right?
Yeah.
I think what happens a lot is we think, oh, it's just a line and we could just change it. And like, but obviously it was sort of really instrumental in how the final work landed. And so I don't know. I think that there's a temptation for a lot of marketers that like, we'll just change that because we can. As opposed to, oh, yeah, it doesn't make me feel really comfortable. Maybe that's a good thing because it'll land strongly with the public,
well,
right?
I think it basically told the story as well. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but something for me is the how we got to that evolutional bit. Mm. You know, why have you got Snoop doing this? And
right,
there
gave
was
it context, gave it a reason
yeah,
for being. Yeah,
and I think, you know, there was another line which never saw the light of day. Which again, I was on the set and I kind of thought about one of the lines, and it was, any time, any zone, trust me. And I just went, oh my God, the ASA are never going to let me get away with that. And
too big of a promise.
Yeah, too big, because we can't deliver at any time, any zone.
Yeah.
And so I remember saying, we need to talk to Snoop. And so I went and spoke to Snoop and said, we can't run that line. We've got some alternatives. And he looked at me like I was going mad. He's like, I'm the musician around here. We'll just drop the line. And I said to him, I mean, there's lots of colour and richness around this story, but I said to him, are you sure? And he looked at me. I was like, yeah, my name's Snoop. Yeah, I know what I'm doing. And so that line never ran because that would have messed everything up. The Get Those Just Eat Fools on the line was kind of pre-going into the song. So that would have been an easier bit to, to edit, which we didn't. But yeah, lots of stories about what came up with the lyrics.
And so dealing with Snoop would be interesting, dealing with Katie, interesting, Christina and so on. How is there anything that holds those celebrities together that you're looking for?
Nothing holds them together. I mean, they're artists in and of themselves and, you know, very different musical tastes. I think the thing that we've tried to do with the talent that we have worked with is do so in a credible, authentic way that is believable for them. So, you know, with Katie, you know, people, fans were screaming for it to go onto Spotify and all that type of stuff. So there's nothing that ties it together. Bearing in mind, you know, the lyrics that we've got, they're very specific lyrics. You know,
they're about the product, right?
We want to deliver some very firm commercial messages in a way that still has that credibility that makes the celeb not look like they've sold out.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because it does give you a vehicle for talking about yourself and some product information in a really fun, entertaining way, right? You can almost say things you wouldn't get away with in other ads because it'd be a bit boring, right? Like you kind of get to say quite a lot about your business and your product.
Well, I think, you know, we've had some catchy lines, you know, that you know, Katie talked about. Get what you want when you want it, margarita with extra cheese on it. You know, Lato delivered the line of, you know, we can go bananas at the grocery store, which is one of our verticals of our business. And, you know, you thought we were just burgers and fries. So kind of changing people's quality perception about what we've got on the platform. So, yeah, some of those, you know, lines are really, really critical. But, you know, all of those celebrities had to approve those lines. And Katie, we went back and forth a lot. She was heavily involved in the lyrics and how they landed and, you know, again, the musicality of it. But the important thing here as well is remembering, you know, why have we chosen music? We think music is a universal language. So the challenge we've got is that we're in 20 markets and they're not all English speaking. So
like Australia.
you said it. So yeah, you know, whether that be Italian or Slovakian or Bulgarian or what have you. So it's like, how do we create something that can work, bearing in mind that did somebody say menu log or did somebody say just eat? We'll talk about that maybe, but all of that, that's all transcreated into every single language.
This episode is brought to you by Mutinex.
Are you going to start talking about Mutinex again?
Yep. It's that amazing marketing mix modeling platform that helps marketers make better investment decisions.
I thought it was more complicated than that.
No, not according to the script. They measure the true impact of marketing on your bottom line using clever computers and people.
Mutinex Growth OS. Your best decisions start here. For more information or to request a demo, visit mutinex.co. That's M-U-T-I-N-E-X.
We know Henry too. We had him on the show. Great bloke. 97% human, 3% cyborg.
So, Ich da Lieferando is our German platform.
Why don't you change all the names to be Just Eat?
We think there's real value in local market importance. And I think we saw evidence of that actually when we launched Katie and people realised that did somebody say menu log is also did somebody say skip and did somebody, and it all went mad on TikTok because they were like, hang on a minute, I thought this was all about menu log. And in that local market, there is a, you know, it's Australian for Australians, Just Eat, that's the local market name. So that was also quite charming. You know, did somebody say skip is our Canadian brand? Worked really well for us. And that kind of inter-country rivalry.
But wouldn't it just be easier and more efficient and, you know, just to have one brand everywhere?
Yeah, it would, but we've built so much brand equity
but
in some of those
names. More conversations, more theatrics with lots of different ones. Yeah. Just to the south of Australia on the east is another country called New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I can remember we have a breakfast cereal here called Weet-Bix, and the song is Aussie kids are Weet-Bix kids, Aussie kids are Weet-Bix kids. And I can still remember the disappointment when I was in New Zealand once and I heard Kiwi kids are Weet-Bix kids.
Because you'd heard the original.
Yeah, it never even occurred to me.
But that probably wasn't ever original, wasn't it? It was always probably, okay, we've got this country and we need to have it in German song. You've got to have Aussie kids, Kiwi kids. That was probably always the way.
It's like when my parents thought that Toyota Bugger was a really great Australian ad. I'm like, it's from New Zealand.
Yeah.
But that happens a bit, right?
And I saw some research recently that was talking about the, did somebody say, and they was mentioning the fact that you're singing the tagline, the name of the company in the line, albeit the name of the company changes lots and lots of times. And they were saying it was a thing on distinctive assets, just saying it's the most effective way to get a distinctive asset built quickly is just sing your company name. Why, and only like 3% or something of companies do it. Why do you think so few companies do that?
Why do I think so few do?
Yeah, even if it's so effective. Like, why don't you sing, for example, Brent, why don't you sing Telstra in your end line?
Well, I'd like to hear Suzo's answer before I proffer my own.
Well, you know, everyone's got a different job to be done. And so for us, it was about driving that top of mind awareness, and what better way to put your brand front and centre in everything you do. That first version I talked to you about, all it said was, did somebody say, did somebody say, did somebody say, did somebody say, just eat, did somebody say, did somebody say, did somebody say menu log? And I think that, again, it was a trial, wasn't it? We didn't know it was going to work. But the distinctive assets piece is really important for me as a marketer. And, you know, back in 2022, I remember watching Mark Ritson, you know, do his top 10, you know, like top of the pops. And I was watching him do it live, and then we were number one. I was like, what? And people messed me up. Suzo, we're number one for our Sonic, you know, asset, you know, our new monitor, above Intel, above Netflix, above lots, you know, go compare. And actually the same has happened with SCA here in Australia in terms of we're number two. We were number two with Katie in terms of that mnemonic that we kind of moved on from Snoop, who was then number seven, again, same year, 2022. Behind, I'm just going to have to check my notes here because it is an, Bunnings, as a brand.
Bunnings Warehouse, yeah. To answer your question, I think Suzo said it really well, that it depends on the job to be done. With Telstra, we've got 100% awareness, but more than that, we have, you know, you thought your ad was polarizing. Our whole brand is very polarizing, and we've got a lot of people who, the minute they know it's Telstra, they just reject us outright. So I think when you're trying to move people's perceptions of a brand, when you've got people who have a negative perception of your brand, sometimes you need to sneak up on them a little bit more, surprise them a little bit more. Land the message,
sing,
entertain them, move them, and then reveal the brand. I think if we were just so upfront that this is a Telstra ad, I actually think that we would never have a chance of moving some of those very ingrained negative perceptions that a certain group of people have about our brand. That would be my answer.
I preferred Suzo's.
Yeah. But hey, I did work for a crave judge very early in my career. I said, if you can put the fucking name in the fucking tagline, put the fucking brand in the fucking tagline.
That's right. And then if you can sing it. Like I've quoted Ted Horton on this before about it's not that other agencies can't do what I do. It's just that they can't bring themselves to do what I do.
Yeah, they're not prepared to.
And I reckon there is something like that about singing. And even having a barbershop quartet, that is not, it's not cool, is it?
Look, we are a brand for everyone, you know, and so everyone's different. So this isn't just about being down with the cool kids. You know, it's not, I mean, Snoop was pretty cool and my kids thought they had the coolest mum in the playground. But yeah, I got some brownie points there. But the point is, it's not all about, you know, young urbanites. It's about everyone. It's about mums and dads, grannies, kids, everyone. So yeah, it isn't. I think I'd like to think we've made it cool with some of the celebrities that we've chosen to work with and who've chosen to work with us and put their name and helped us with that kind of fame and feeling piece. I think we've definitely added an element of coolness.
I don't know. Let's
Snoop, what did your CEO say when you said we want to work with this famous ganja-loving gangster rap star? What did, how did that go down?
Have you done the right level of due diligence,
he's
Susie?
Dutch, isn't he?
Um,
or am I resorting to stereotypes?
No. Our current CEO is Dutch.
Oh, okay.
The CEO who commissioned...
I thought you were saying Snoop Dogg. I was like, no, dude, he's from like Compton.
And who backed me was English and quite conservative.
Right.
So arguably the Dutch are a little bit more laissez-faire than the Brits, but that is stereotyping. But yeah, I had to go to the lawyers and they were very anxious and we had to make sure that we had the right bits and bobs put into the legal agreement if anything went wrong.
And did you feel quite exposed as the marketing director that, okay, because it's the thing with celebrities, right? When we choose a celebrity, they embody the brand, they become the brand in many ways. And, you know, anything reputationally, they do.
Yeah,
right?
I was worried.
Yeah?
I was worried. But, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, with risk comes reward.
Yeah.
And I knew that Snoop wasn't going to become the brand ambassador forever. I knew it was for a period of time.
How long did you use Snoop?
Well, in fact, we've just launched Snoop in America, so we're continuing to use him.
Yeah.
We've just launched him with...
With new creative or the original creative?
The original creative that had a new edit because we're called Grubhub.
Oh, yes. More complexity.
And are you getting him to do anything over there to help launch it?
He did a few interviews for us, yeah. But I think all I was going to say with that was I knew it's for a finite period of time and wasn't going to be something like we're backing... everything to do with him and that point about, you know, he becomes the embodiment of the brand. I didn't want that. I wanted that injection of cool.
Did you know then where you were going after Snoop? If he was only going to be there for a year, did you think to yourself, gosh, we're going to need somebody really
Jay-Z?
Populous and wholesome afterwards?
Rapper?
No, I was thinking more like Katie. Like, yeah. did you know that it was going to be somebody wholesome, let's just for want of a better word?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd describe Katie as wholesome, but I remember my kids saying to me, "Mom, I think you've peaked too soon. It's really good. Everyone's talking
with
about
Snoop,
it.
Yeah, Snoop, yeah,
where do you go now?"
Yeah.
And that was an anxious moment, to be honest.
Mm.
And so we decided to go from rap to pop.
Yeah,
and with that, you bring in a whole different audience.
So that was so it went from rap to pop, and then within pop, you look for the right person.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, let's not forget, I think, you know, the point with Snoop, whilst he's rap, we did a ton of research, you know, looking at, you know, recognizability, likability, all of that stuff across all of our markets, which varies, you know, up and down. But Snoop transcends generations.
Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah.
And there's something about, like, I remember back in the day, selling out was a concept. And now just the whole concept of selling out isn't a thing. It's almost hard to describe what selling out actually is.
It's like business, and they want to be.
Yeah,
isn't that Jay-Z's thing? Is he says, what does he say? He goes, "I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman." Hey, on Snoop, before we leave Snoop, because I think, you know, there's been a bit of marketing sort of news about Snoop recently with his solo stove campaign, where he was giving up smoke. And it caused, I'd never heard of Solo Stove before, and everyone was talking about Solo Stove on the back of that Snoop piece, and then the CEO gets fired because they didn't see the uplift in sales that they were expecting by using a celebrity like Snoop. So I was just really interested in your sort of take on that, and you know, how did you convince your business to be patient, or did you not need to be patient because it was just super instant? You saw an instant uplift with Snoop. But just, yeah, issuing your take on what happened with Solo Stove, and then...
I think, look, all I'd say about Snoop is he is, he's a proper businessman.
Yeah.
And can see the dollar signs. And, from day one, you know, it was a commercial deal that we had with him. I mean, I think, you know, Snoop never even heard of Just Eat. You know, he's in America. We're at this little island called the UK. Never really heard of this company. So he was just he was tough on his commercial negotiations. So it was a business, you know, transaction.
Yeah.
And of course, we wanted to make sure that by utilising Snoop that we were driving new customer growth and order growth. And we did. So.
Did you see it instantly, or did it take a little while to build?
No, I think we saw some, when you say instant, I'm not talking about day one, but, you know, again, this is all about having the right media weights behind stuff as well.
And
we did a really good job at that. But also, again, maybe somewhat fortuitously, we launched Snoop during COVID. And so we looked different. We sounded different to all the other help type support ads.
Yes. Sad ads, all those sad ads.
The sad ads. We stood out. But again, you know, just to be really clear, there was a lot of anxiety. Like, I don't think we can run this work, Suzo.
Because it felt not in tune with the time?
It felt tone deaf.
Yeah.
So we did some research and people said, we definitely want that. We want a bit of joy. We want a bit of normality. We're sick of looking at all this stuff. And so...
It feels like research has been... Because, look, to be fair, I think on this show we've often pointed out where research has been a hindrance or got in the way of creativity. It feels like you use research as a real tool to help sort of convince people that... You know, got the right idea, we've got the right time. So it sounds like it's been quite useful for you.
Well, we're a data-driven company. So Justy and its Insight and or Menulog in this instance and the use of Insight. But you're right. I think that what can happen, certainly with pre-testing, and I'm thinking about some stuff now, but the pre-testing can be a real problem because, you know... people are seeing it in kind of a snapshot moment. There's no wear in.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that's it. It's been and it's gone. And what do you think? Like, sometimes people don't know what to think and then you get a read on it and it makes you really nervous and you think, oh, I've got no creative judgment because I've got this wrong because the consumer in that instance, Adam, said, oh, not sure. And that can hinder you as a marketing director, because you've got a data point that says this may not be as great as it's going to be. So
do you do it, or do you?
Then I work with John Evans, and I kind of do the real kind of system one testing, and it's probably slightly better.
So you do a bit of it with system. You would do a bit of pre-testing with system one before you launch
always,
your stuff. Yeah,
always. Yeah, taking a look at it. But again, sometimes you just, as you said earlier, you know, you have to kind of go with your gut.
Yeah,
and are you testing celebrities to use?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
In system one?
No, not in system one.
Okay. And with those celebrities, are you modelling the incremental sales of using a celebrity versus not using a celebrity? How are you modelling that when you have to convince the...
We're not modelling that. I don't know how you'd
model
that.
You're just looking at appeal and relevance and...
Yeah, appeal, relevance, likability, any red flags. But to that point around whether you go with the celebrity and whether you don't, we started with the non-celebrity route and then went into the celebrity just to help lift us, you know? Kind of that's why you work.
You can compare the two. Just coming back to the... Did you have any thoughts on the solo stove thing? Obviously they were very quick to... very quick to say this wasn't a success, get rid of the CEO and things. Did you have any thoughts on that?
So the CEO got fired.
Yeah.
I can't believe that was the only reason that the CEO got fired, is what I'd say. Yeah. I think that just to put those two together and just go, that didn't work.
Everyone did.
I think the press release did. I think when they announced that they did that as a reason, but maybe he was...
Maybe
being
there's other
mean
things.
To other people
We don't know, do we?
Yeah,
but
we don't.
Maybe
we don't.
That there was just time for something new. Only that CEO can tell you the truth.
When I really wanted to do this was when you were saying that you've got credibility, and when I went, no, you don't. So here's a little bit of pre-testing we've done, or maybe it's post-testing.
It's pub testing.
It's pub testing.
You've gone to the pub. What have you asked?
We wanted to test it, see if it passes the pub test and see if a use of and Menulog and the overt use of celebrities singing the name of the company and singing the offer, if that passes the pub test or not. And so we put that to some people. We did.
Yeah.
And we're going to play you now what they said. And we haven't heard this either, so we don't know what it's going to be.
I could say it's entertaining.
Yes and no.
I think so, yeah. They're really entertaining.
I like how they've weaved it into a very catchy song and it becomes a lyric more than just a tagline, and it's something that I've definitely found myself singing.
With the music, I think it's really catchy, and I always actually sometimes find myself singing it.
I think that's good. It sticks. It's like, there's a bit of a jingle. Yeah, it's great.
I think it's really smart for the brand, but I think they have to be very specific in the celebrities that they're picking to do it. Their brand as a celebrity is already quite, they lean into like a gimmick and a character kind of aesthetic. So if it was someone like Adele or maybe Billie Eilish who come is very like raw, I don't think it would sit as well. It would be like, oh, this is a joke.
I mean, it always has to do with the brand itself. Celebrities can get in big trouble partnering themselves with certain brands, but I think for ones like this, it's lighthearted, it's fun, it's you know, them doing what they do, which is music.
I think Snoop Dogg works incredibly well because, like, basically you're appealing to the Uber Eats crowd that have the munchies.
Yes, this passes the pub test.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of something you can chat about at pubs and works out well.
Yeah, it passes the pub test.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it? That what was interesting for me was that whole thing about Adele or Billie Eilish not being appropriate, but there was something about the others that found maybe the self-deprecating nature of it or something.
Well, I think, again, it goes back to authenticity. And, yeah, you know, we haven't kind of, as you said, you know, they haven't sold out. They're singing stuff that they actually would like to put on Spotify because, yeah, people are singing it. But Adele's an interesting one.
Is she next? She's next. Oh, my God.
Adele would never do anything to do with fast food.
Okay.
Not the new Adele.
Not the new Adele. She wouldn't do takeaway. She might do one of our new grocery verticals. But,
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, great. You pleased? Did it pass the pub test?
I have to say, I'm sitting here with my heart pumping out of my chest thinking, thank God for that.
Yeah, not much does.
Well,
that's the second time it's yeah, passing unanimously.
Oh, wow. So, well, thank you for putting me on the spot because I didn't know what was coming and I thought I might have to take off my headphones and storm out of the door. But no, look, everything they said is exactly what we're at. It's like, we don't take ourselves too seriously. It's fun. People start singing it. My daughter phoned me. She's at university in Bristol and she phoned me the other night and she said, oh, Mum, it was so funny. I was on a call to her best friend and her best friend was singing Katy Perry in the background. She didn't realise that my daughter Connie was listening to her and she said, Mum, told you it works. You know, just naturally singing this song, yeah, which is great, about us. So that, honestly, guys, that's a gift.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a marketer's
now,
dream.
We've talked a lot about Snoop, but of course you're now moved on to your third iteration of this. So why don't you tell us about how the current campaign with Christina Aguilera
and Lato.
And Lato. Thank you. How's that work? Is that work better? Is this become a cumulative thing where each time you do it, they just get better and better? Yeah, tell us about how one's working.
I think everyone has their favourite, you know, and that's why I mentioned earlier, you know, when my kids said, Mum, you've peaked too soon with Snoop because he's a universal icon, right? Christina Aguilera is a legend. And Lato is this new upcoming hip-hop artist that a lot of us don't know because, again, we're not on that target age group.
Including me and Adam, obviously, by our question.
Yeah, yeah, you're not. But is it working? Yeah, look, what I want to say is that my colleagues and peers down here in Australia have done the most incredible work. And what they do beautifully is how they take this global piece of work and localise it and make it really relevant to Australians, New Zealanders, and put their own Aussie New Zealand spin on it. And so I'm really grateful that they take it with open arms and kind of go, wow, what can we do with it? So they've worked really hard to take all of the work they did with Snoop as well was fantastic. So yeah, they become a little bit of a case study. When I'm talking back at HQ, it's like, this is how you do global local.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're a great team to work with.
Awesome. And like views are up, you're getting even more on YouTube and earned lots of stuff each
crazy
time.
Crazy numbers.
Yeah.
Absolute crazy numbers. And social mentions. And I think, again, that's why we've chosen this route for now, which is about building on the campaign and driving some of that organic reach that money can't buy. Well, it can buy, but it's an expensive buy.
Yeah.
So to be able to drive some of that opportunity for people who are actively sharing and reaching out, looking and searching for this content and watching it over and over again, mind you, as well, is just, it's fantastic. So yeah, we're very happy with how things are going.
That's interesting what you're saying before about the local markets taking the idea and running with it and making it bigger. And I wonder what can be done for global, I'm just thinking purely here as a satellite country of often receiving global stuff, is what can be negotiated for local markets when you're creating global content that they can then adapt and use and play with and not just receive a, here it is, here's your video asset, here's your static, and now
the Australians have done a great job with that, because they, you know, there is a certain budget that we're working with, and you know, the contract says we get XYZ, and then our Australian colleagues say, yeah, but we want to push the boat a little bit harder and we want, you know, XYZ, and we go, well, there's a cost associated with that inevitably, because you're talking to celebrities and anything that they can monetize, but actually if it makes solid business sense, we'll have an addendum to the contract that gets negotiated, and then, you know, the Australian team can do whatever they need and want to do with the celebrity.
So is that what happened with Christina? So there was, the Australians had an idea, which is around Christina's bag. So she had a Manilog delivery bag.
Yeah, that blew up down here.
And
it blew up everywhere.
And then you spoke to Christina about it, customised the contract, said, hey, do this. And then you build it happens.
Look, they have to like the idea for starters. But yeah, I mean, they love the idea because it was a great idea. And in fact, it made a lot of the other markets quite jealous. And it's nice to have a little bit of intercompany rivalry.
Oh, definitely. That's an interesting filter, right, when you work with these celebrities, that they have to like it. Like, you can't sort of do any lame thing, right? It almost raises the game creatively. In some ways.
Well, and I think that is also down to a level of understanding and marketers' maturity, because, like, why couldn't we have this? It's like, because they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because they've got their own professional credibility and their own brands protect.
Yeah.
So, it has to be, as I said, it has to be authentic and something that makes sense for them to do, because they haven't sold out. They believe that this is going to be additive to their brand.
So one of the debates that's been raging in marketing has been distinctiveness versus differentiation. So if I look at your category,
commoditized,
there's a brand that uses celebrities and has got a really hooky line we all remember. Oh, that's Uber Eats. But like, you know what I mean? But it's quite similar, right? So Uber Eats have got celebrities, they've got Tonight I'll Be Eating, you've got somebody say Manilog, you've got, you know, celebrities as well. You could argue there's not a huge amount of differentiation there. So I'd just be interested in your thoughts on, you know, how do you compete with that brand that is almost feels like you guys read the same playbook in some way. I mean, do you worry about that? How do you think about that?
No, I don't look in the rearview mirror very often, and I don't mean that to sound arrogant. I think that what we've got is special and it's consistent. And I don't really like to talk about the competition, because competition is healthy and they're doing a great job, but they've done lots of very different things and have clearly got very deep pockets. Some of the work that they've done is brilliant and inspiring. I'm comfortable with where we're at. We are not on a copycat situation at all. We have been really clear about our strategy, what we're trying to do since 2018, and we're still doing it. And we're not anticipating any significant changes anytime soon. And if we were, I wouldn't be telling you anyway.
Well said. Obviously, you are all about consistency. Does that get boring as a marketer like that? You want something new and different, fresh, you know, you just get a bit bored.
It's really important as a leader that you keep people on that path and being clear about the job to be done. What are we trying to do? How do we go about doing it? What messages do we need to land? And to be honest, when you're working with, you know, again, multiple celebrities over multiple years, that's really bloody exciting, actually. That's not boring. That's really exciting. And I think there will be people out there who would, not quite, but kill to have my job. So I feel incredibly lucky. And I know that a lot of the marketers do. I certainly know that the Aussie team do.
Excellent. So that was fantastic. One of the questions we sometimes ask when we remember is, if you had to sum up your creative philosophy on a black T-shirt, what would it be? How do you sum up what you're all about?
I have something that's called the Suzo mantra. I'm not sure you would put on it. Wouldn't be cool on a T-shirt, but I talk about leading and delivering great work that delivers great results that everyone is proud of. and that everyone is proud of bit is probably the most important bit, because we have, you know, in the Australian office, we've got 250 employees here. I want them to go home feeling proud of the organisation, to drive their energy and motivation to, you know, keep those customers that we've got happy and get new ones. So that bit's really important, that people are excited about what we're doing, because ultimately they're my brand champions and they're all over the world. So great work, great results that everyone's proud of.
That's a good T-shirt.
Suze, that's wonderful. Thank you
Thanks
so
much.
Thanks
for having me.
Thanks Brilliant. For flying down, especially to this podcast with us. It's very kind. Great to have you on, and I think an inspiration to a lot of marketers out there. So thanks, Suze.
Thanks so much, Brilliant. Guys.
Brent, that was interesting. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, wasn't it great to meet Suze? I mean, I just think if I was her CEO or CFO or on her board, I would just feel so confident that she knows what she's doing, and you know, she just she'd feel so much confidence.
She did. She felt two things: very, very grounded, deliberate, knew where she was going or what she was saying, and coupled with a really humble, slightly ironically self-deprecating manner as well.
Yeah.
And I also found it fascinating that she's really into drama, and she's created three of the most dramatic ads of the last 5 years.
No,
you know, that's no coincidence, right?
Exactly. And I think the other thing too, I mean, I spent a bit of time in New York working on global stuff, and I think it's often hard to get work to travel. I think two things about Suze. A, just the way she was so into what the local markets do with the work, you know, and them contributing and then be able to localize it. I just felt that's a really important sort of attitude. It's not this sort of, we're going to hand it down from the mountain and you will run it. I think she had a really great attitude around, we want the local markets to localize it and build on it. But the other thing, because I think when you do global work, it has to, I think global has to be able to do things that the local markets couldn't do by themselves.
Yeah.
And so if you get a star like Snoop, that's a great example where globally you could get Snoop, but you wouldn't be able to do that if you're just Australia or just Ireland or just Slovakia, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of like I think it's obvious, or maybe it wasn't, but where Menulog's local agency, so it was our agency who had the idea of the Christina's local back, but it never even occurred to me that then they had to go back to her and renegotiate the contract and get all of that stuff done. And just to your point about being supportive of local markets and local market ideas, that is a pain in the ass to do that for one market. You times that by 20.
Yeah.
And that's pretty quickly quite chaotic.
Yeah.
So giving the local markets an idea big enough to play around with and then supporting them to do that is really important.
Yeah.
And I like the point you make about that's her role.
Yeah, totally. And she seems to do it really, really well.
Cool. And then there's one more thing that struck me about this interview, which I find really interesting. Is having the audacity to sign these massive contracts with these, you know, someone like Snoop and to a lesser degree, Katie and Christina, takes an organization a shitload of balls to do.
Yeah.
So how do you mount the argument and how do you convince an organization that it's the right thing to do? I find fascinating.
Yeah, well, it takes powers of influence, persuasion, but back to my first point, and they need to be confident and trust you.
And is that what you saw in Suze?
100%. I just felt like I'd have so much confidence in her if she was leading my brand.
Yeah. Cool. All righty. Till next time.
Yeah. Later. God bless. If you got your God bless.